You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, July 29th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, folks, and what a week! Joining us, of course, on Friday, the great Cliff Schechter, to get his thoughts on the Democratic National Convention. Also on the program today, a special guest to give us her insights, analysis of what happened this week at the Democratic National Convention. Perhaps we'll also get a movie recommendation from our special guest. We'll see. But of course, regardless of what your assessment of Hillary Clinton's politics are, whether you are a Republican, a Democrat, a Libertarian, a Green Party member, an International Socialist Workers' Party member, whether you are an independent, I would imagine, I mean, short of being basically a men's rights activist or a non-regressive leftist or a regressive leftist, I'm not sure exactly where I would put them. If you're an Islamo-cuck, maybe that, I don't know where you would stand on that. But I think most normal people can agree that this is pretty historic. To have the first woman in history, in U.S. history, to be nominated for president of a major national party. Here is Hillary Clinton making that history by accepting that nomination last night during her acceptance speech.
Friends, it is with humility, determination, and boundless confidence in America's promise that I accept your nomination for President of the United States.
Pretty dramatic. Pretty dramatic, and it is a rather significant historical achievement. People can have differing opinions as to the political implications of it, or at least in terms of what policies are enacted and whatnot. But I think socially and culturally, most people would find this to be a positive. If you missed the interview that I did yesterday with Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, it was fascinating, her perspective on this. She's the only female Kennedy to run for office. And there have been half a dozen plus, eight, maybe nine. I'm just going through it in my head now. Maybe nine male Kennedys who have run for office. And so she had an interesting perspective on this, which I would encourage all of you to check out. And I would also say, too, that I spoke to the head of Emily's List. Was that on the show yesterday? It was. And I also thought it was, you know, interesting. She's very sort of very positive person, the type of person who doesn't say anything negative and just said, like, well, yeah, Republicans, are just there's something fundamental and inherent in Republicanism that still lends itself to a lot less women running for office. They peaked like 30 years ago and have basically been in a holding pattern at that point. So maybe they'll catch up one day. Also, one of the highlights of the night last night, I thought this was pretty funny. There were some amazing speeches last night. I really think that my favorite was Reverend William Barber. We will get to that later in the program. He really, that was a barn burner. He is a good speaker. And I've heard him before and obviously seen him on Hayes. And I think at one point we attempted to get him on the program, but we didn't. Barber is the guy who has been one of the main drivers and organizers of Moral Mondays in North Carolina. And we will get to his speech in a bit. But following William Barber, which would be hard for anybody, was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I don't know, I don't have a sense of where, of what age you need to be to have remembered him as an NBA icon. But is that funny? And so Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was part of the Lakers, one of the Lakers dynasties. I mean, they've had a couple, I guess, but with Magic Johnson. And then I think before that he was with the Bucks, Milwaukee Bucks, I believe it was.
Leading scorer of all time.
Leading scorer of all time. I didn't know that. And I mean, with all due respect, he had a great sort of a hook shot that you don't really see that often, I think, anymore, because you just don't see those type of set shots. But the guy was also like, he's like, I don't know if he's 8 feet tall, but he's pretty close. So, you know, he didn't have far to drop the ball. It was basically he had to drop the ball. But he was a great player, nevertheless. I don't mean to diminish from his talents, but and he also has a pretty good sense of humor, I guess. Here is how he opened up his speech at the DNC on night four.
I'm Michael Jordan, and I'm here with Hillary. I said that because I know that Donald Trump couldn't tell the difference.
You can even hear somebody. Did you put that in? I didn't hear that the first time.
That was at the convention. That was at the convention.
Are you not wearing your headphones? Don't you want to hear the show? Okay. Maybe you should, just so that you know where you are. So that's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with the rim shot. I didn't hear that the first time, but...
That's why I was laughing, because I read this.
Yeah, it's a pretty funny joke. Other headlines today that I neglected to headline because I'm out of sorts. It was a long trip. It was, not far, but it was relentless. And it was like 100 degrees. And if it wasn't 100 degrees, it was in the mid-90s because of the torrential downpour and excessive winds. Six Michigan State employees were charged in the Flint water crisis today. We will get to that story. The Donald is very upset with the things that he heard at the convention last night and over the past couple of days. The U.S. Navy to name a ship after Harvey Milk. Talk about a sea change. All right.
Are you going to give yourself a womp, womp, womp on that one?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
The FBI is investigating another hack, this time of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC. So there seems to have been a concerted effort. The DCCC, of course, would have nothing to do with Hillary Clinton. So it would have to do more with, I mean, I guess just Democrats in general. Unclear what they've uncovered for that, but I have a feeling we're going to find out that the Russian-based hackers were involved in this as well. Meanwhile, Chelsea Manning could face indefinite solitary confinement, an extension of her sentence, over a suicide attempt that she made. And meanwhile, Fox News executives are dropping like flies in the wake of the Roger Ailes revelations that, I don't know if it's that much of a revelation, but I guess.
It'd be a revelation if he didn't do that.
And lastly, and we will definitely get to these two stories, conservatives are enraged at Bradley Cooper because he has politics that differ from theirs, and outraged by their misperception of Tim Kaine's lapel pin. We will get to all that and more, but first, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, Cliff Schechter will be with us. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone, ladies and gentlemen, is a man who has not only educated us over the years on the intricacies of politics, but also inspired musicians to write such things as this.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, the great Jimmy Reefer Cakes theme song praising our next guest, Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Sammy?
I'm exhausted, but
yes, understandable.
It was a crazy week, I am really interested to get your sense of it. You were not at the Democratic National Convention this time, which was a huge loss
for the Democrats. Incredibly, well, hurt their polling numbers.
I mean, for me personally, but. The only upside is that you have a distinct perspective as, you know, a TV viewer. What was give me your sense of just sort of overall, and then maybe we can go through a couple of what you saw as the highlights.
Sure. I think a lot of it, there's such a stark contrast
that I think some of it has already been covered by other folks, sadly, because I'd like to give you that distinct perspective. I think I won't be shocking you if I say that the Democrats were overall, it was a very optimistic, parade of speakers as opposed to the death, doom, gloom Republican convention where the world could end at any moment. Certainly there's people that took a hatchet to Trump, which needed to be done, rhetorically, of course. But overall, there are a lot of it. Look, they were working on sort of saying that we have solutions to the future. We're the optimistic party, and some of those kinds of themes ran throughout. But obviously a lot of it was also because Hillary Clinton's numbers on trust are not particularly good. They were trying to say, at the very least, if you she's the person you can trust in this office. By the way, if you don't trust her completely, the other guy's a freaking lunatic.
Right.
Which he did a nice assist in helping remind people with his antics during the convention. Trump obviously off holding his crazy press conference, which really only got the only thing was people paid attention to was his potential his breaking the Logan Act and trying to help a foreign government or encourage a foreign government in what some people I've seen call actually the definition of treason. It's certainly borderline. But there were like a whole ton of other crazy things he said in that speech too. They just don't get covered because it's hard to keep up with all of it. So that certainly helped. I mean, I guess it could be summed up in that one line that was a last minute addition to former Mayor Bloomberg's speech, which was let's come together and elect a competent, sane person. Maybe if I could say any overall theme, maybe that was it.
Right. And I should have probably prefaced that ask with asking you to put on a specific hat, and because that is the sort of the dispassionate objective analysis as to what the convention sought out to do, and I think to a certain extent, largely. They executed it. Whether or not you can actually move anybody with something like that, I guess it remains to be seen. But that definitely seemed to be the broad attempts by the Democrats this week. Give me your sense of from the perspective of a left-leaning member of the Democratic coalition. I mean, I know that you've definitely obviously been a big Bernie fan for a long time. I don't know exactly. I mean, I think you were a little bit more in Hillary's camp over the course of the race. But from the perspective of somebody who was give us that, how you would analyze it from the perspective of the Bernie people.
I definitely lost my patience there, to be honest. I became a little while back, and I think I said this on the show, I became a one-issue voter, and because I'm tired of having in the issue I work the most on, which is gun safety, obviously, I've had to deal with people on the right who are one-issue voters, and we've never been willing to do that, and I see this as a growing tragedy, which I think a lot of people do now. And so that was why I originally was for Hillary more than Bernie, because it was more that she was leading on the issue. It's not that I didn't think Bernie would do the right thing. It just wasn't an issue he was totally comfortable with and wanted to make his issue. But I always have been incredibly, pro-Bernie, and have been really up through, towards the end. I told you my thoughts, and they haven't changed, were that when that last primary, and it was mid-June, happened, and it was clear he wasn't going to win, that he should have endorsed and been more supportive. He waited a little bit longer. I thought he should have done it sooner. I don't think in the end that probably affected anything. But for the people that were there, and I guess, look, this is just where I come down this stuff. I would call myself, certainly towards the left of the Democratic spectrum, but I just have too many fresh memories of Ralph Nader and what happened in 2000. And I don't fully, I'm not one of these people who just lays the blame completely on Ralph Nader. You know, Al Gore ran a terrible campaign. He didn't utilize Bill Clinton nearly enough because they allowed themselves to be spooked by the Monica Lewinsky thing, even though they picked up seats in 98. And Bush, of course, didn't tell the truth in any close to any way about who he really was and made himself sound much more moderate. So there are many factors there, but there's no doubt that 96,000 people, three quarters of whom would have voted for Gore when they were polled, voted for Nader in Florida and Ohio, and in New Hampshire, it made the difference too. And so I just, you know, so now when we've got somebody who literally seems pretty clearly, if not actively colluding with a foreign power, certainly is benefiting from what they're doing. To me, to be interrupting people, I have no problem when there, some of the more sort of pro-war voices got up there and people cheered no more war. I was fine with that. I think that's – but the stupid heckling and the yelling and the whatever, you know, that's just not me. At this point, it's very simple. I've got kids. I live in this country. And we've got 4 months right now or so between us and one person who can potentially stop us from electing somebody who – we can play around with the verbiage if we want, but has admitted that he, you know, has come out in support of banning an entire religion from this country, who retweets Jewish stars on Twitter, quotes people who are white supremacists, and pretty clearly is in league with Putin, whether they're actually colluding, has said he'll, you know, reevaluate and say, yeah, it's great that you grabbed Crimea, and we may not stand up for our NATO allies, but, you know, I'm sure that won't encourage Russia to go into, let's say, Lithuania or Estonia. Or, I mean, you know, I look at World War I. I hate to do this too much, but, you know, as somebody who is with a history background, and I look at the spark, I don't think anybody thought, you know, Archduke Franz Ferdinand being shot was going to start a world war that would kill millions of people.
Right.
But right now, we've got Vladimir Putin in Russia trying to expand what he's doing. We've got what's going on in China. We've got Erdogan, who pretty clearly is moving in a very authoritarian direction. The Brexit vote that just happened that's weakened the EU. Another terrorist or two attacks in France, and for all we know, we'll get stuck with Marine Le Pen, too. I mean, it's not hard if you want to look objectively at this stuff to see that really it's pretty easy to have that match that becomes a spark, and God knows where it all ends up. So I'm just not screwing around. I think the people who are there, who mostly, it wasn't a lot of them, I think most of the Bernie people there are upset maybe that Bernie's not the nominee, but are supportive. And I've seen a number of them, people that were behind Democracy Spring, just wrote a Huffington Post, you know, about everybody should get behind Hillary. I think most people have done it. It's the people that were there who clearly, to me, I don't think ever were Democrats and are probably Jill Stein people. And, you know, I just can't get behind people screwing around when we've got a potential fascist getting elected. And, you know, and Jill Stein is playing the role of Nader and saying, oh, go ahead, vote for me. It won't make a difference. By the way, I just found out she's an anti-vaxxer, too, which I have an incredibly big problem with, no matter what, you know, anything else. So I don't know if that jumble of things I just said makes any sense, Sam.
Well, but, I mean, I think let me push back on a little of that.
Okay.
I mean, one thing that was clear to me, and look, you know, I don't know if conventions mean anything. I don't know if platforms mean anything or promises from candidates mean anything. I can tell you that the data shows that promises from candidates actually do mean something. Like, it's not, there is a relationship between what a president does and what they said they would do in terms of being a candidate. And it's generally fairly aligned.
Yep.
Whether or not the platforms in the past have had that much influence, I don't think that they've had, it's hard to say that they've had much influence. Although I will say this, I don't remember you know, in my adult lifetime anyways, the platform being so publicly debated, having so much stakes, having it negotiated in such a public way, having it being cited in so many ways. I mean, like, I don't remember anybody talking about the platform in 2008.
No, ever. It used to be like a silent thing that you gave as a gift to your more extreme members, and nobody really talked about.
Well,
much
but,
more
but,
the Republican Party even than the Democratic Party.
But in the Democratic Party, because in the Democratic Party, actually, it was a gift to the DLC. I mean, it was.
You go back to the 80s. Yes. The power in the party has been with them.
You go back and look at that document and things like deficit cutting. And I mean, it was a third way document. And
that's true.
And so I would have to guess. I mean, it's complete speculation that the platform is going to have a little more salience, a little more importance to the Democratic Party going forward, at this document anyways. And it's quite clear to me that Sanders staying in the race until he did brought that about. And last night you had Clinton, and in terms of like the protest, I mean, you had Clinton acknowledge. Here's Hillary Clinton at one point saying that she's, or I don't know if we have this sound, where she says, "I've heard you," and that she's basically working with Bernie. I mean, here is clip number two. Listen to what she says here.
Sure.
"And we will also transform the way we prepare our young people for those jobs. Bernie Sanders and I will work together to make college tuition free for the middle class and debt free for all."
I mean, earlier, or at one point, she had said, "You know, I hear you."
Yeah, she mentioned that she heard, you know, that she gave Bernie a compliment and that she'd heard. I know what you're saying. Yes.
And so, you know, So in terms of the protest, I mean, I think some of them were mistimed. There were certainly, I think, a lot more protests during her speech last night than television viewers, I guess, registered. Because you
well,
could hear it a lot of times.
California delegation, it was pretty close to the sound and
that's right.
And the cameras. And
California was there was a lot of folks in there, but. Every time we heard a Hillary chant that took place.
That was them drowning out protesters.
Yes, because a lot of times it was like all of a sudden she's like midway through a sentence and all of a sudden you start.
Do you understand why that's my problem, Sam?
Yeah, like, yeah.
You've made a very good case for why Sam, that's you, sorry. You made a very good case for why Bernie Sanders, one can argue with me and say, no, he should have stayed in longer, even after, because, look, she came around to 83% of people getting free college. Anybody who's if you're making less than $125,000
right.
a year, which I think is a very good compromise. She certainly has come around on not just saying we're going to protect Social Security, we're going to increase it, which, you know, is one that's near and dear to my heart.
Yes.
So I think there's a legitimate argument there. But to me, by making that argument, it even invalidates what these protesters are doing even more.
Well,
because in the end, they got what they wanted. And they got, frankly, a lot of what I wanted. And, you know, I can even, like, it's not just protesting. You know, if you want to get up there and chant Bernie, that's awesome. And that's part of the convention and have Bernie signs and whatever. But it's the individual and it's the animus. It's the yelling at individuals getting up there and trying to heckle individuals that just think that that's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I'm not refuting that.
I'll just say one more word. When you just got the most progressive platform ever, as you pointed out, and you've got the Reverend Barber up there almost in prime time, and you've got all these other progressives, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Sherrod Brown, all these people in prime time, the energy in our party, as we know, as you point out, compare the document from 1984 or 1988 to where we are now. She's going to need to move to the left. Does anybody think Donald Trump's going to move to the left when the left yells? He's basically going to give you the finger and probably have you arrested. I mean, so that's what pisses me off, is that you achieve this, and you by you, I mean everybody who did this, and but if you sabotage it, if she loses in the end, guess how much of that actually happens? None of it. You've done it all for nothing.
Let me read something from, I mean, because I am of, I to a certain extent, I agree with you. I did read something that was Tom Tomorrow, I went to the opening of the NIB, or not, it wasn't really the opening, but it was an event to celebrate the NIB, which is at thenib.com. It's a political cartoon site that Matt Boers is managing. But Tom Tomorrow did a This Modern Convention, a Ben Jealous edition. Apparently, Tom is friends with Ben. And it's basically just an interview he did with Ben Jealous. And this is what Ben Jealous had to say. Look, when it's a political convention, it's a real convention, not a coronation. It's the strangest kind of cocoon because we come in as one kind of animal and we go out as another. We come in as two campaigns fighting each other and we go out as one campaign fighting somebody else. The protesters are right to be pissed off. The reality is that everybody who's on the campaign that did not succeed is in one of the seven stages of grief, denial, et cetera, and then you get to have acceptance. We have to value those people for two reasons. One is that we're a movement, and the movement succeeded when they have people on the inside and the outside. There's value to people on the outside. It's more in the long term than the short term, but we need to respect that. The other is that the folks on the outside tend to be true believers, folks who are just coming into the process for the first time. And there's a nobility to that insistence that, there's only one way to do the right thing. I will never criticize them. And so I think there's something to that. I will say, though, that I think, you know, it is a real shame that so much of the protest that I saw there, and because, you know, some of it wasn't in the hall, you know, a lot of it was outside right. of the hall
Which,
itself.
By the way, I have no problem with at all. Again, the protesting, because I want to make sure I'm being clear, has its place, and it's been an important part of our history.
You just don't want it to ruin the presentation to the broader electorate because it begins to undermine the campaign. Now,
that's exactly right.
I mean,
you can say what you want outside, do what you want. I'm not saying you can't say what you want. And inside, there should be ways you should cheer for your guy and you should do things. I'm just saying, like, the individual heckling, some of the folks who are still the dead enders there seem to have so much personal animus for Hillary Clinton. And some of it seems to be based on, you know, crap fed by the right. When I see people who are supposed to be on the left retweeting, you know, people on the right ripping, you know, saying Hillary should be in prison. Here we've got Donald Trump basically encouraging Russia to commit cyber espionage. But they're doing, I mean, that stuff, I can't tell you how much that stuff pisses me. You're a useful idiot at that point. That's what you're being. And that's my problem. Okay, so protesting her and moving her to the left and all the stuff that's been done, and frankly, should she be elected, will go on throughout her presidency. All good. You know, she should be protested. But you do have to know when to hold your fire. You know,
well, I think part of the problem is that the protesting is not about moving her to the left. And it is, you know, from the
certainly
perspective.
Certainly not the stuff inside, maybe outside some of the demonstrations, but the stuff inside is just yelling at her and trying to screw up while she's speaking, and I don't see how that's helpful to anyone.
The stuff on the outside, to the extent that I saw, was so inundated with personal grievance that I found
it's resentment.
Yeah, but it's also, it's all about process stuff. And it's all about stuff that is not really issue-based. Like, I didn't see, a short of no TPP signs, you did not see any protest on the grounds. I mean, I'm sure there was some, but I didn't see it, and I saw a healthy amount, where they were really talking about issues. It was.
But you know what, Sam? Even in the no TPP, and you know where I stand on that, but some of the people knew what they're, I mean, I saw plenty of interviews and some people, it was great. And they knew what they're protesting. And other people, this self-indulgence, it seemed like some of them were just holding a sign. They were asked what, you know, specifics with the TPP. They had no idea. It's just, you know, somebody said, hold a no TPP sign. Like, it's fun to, you know, and that's my problem is when you're protesting out of a sort of self-indulgence or out of a look at me versus specific goals you're trying to achieve to move someone in a direction out of personal grievance or personal sort of, hey, look at me versus, you know, actual action that was taken during this election by Black Lives Matter and other groups that moved these candidates to the left. And that's my issue with some of the heckling in the hall. Besides the fact, you know, you're a comedian. I saw Andy Cobb sent out something on Twitter where he was pissed as hell about it. You know, if you've worked in any industry before where people have done that kind of stuff to you, it doesn't gain anything. It's just disrespectful. It's just obnoxious. It achieves nothing but pisses people off at you. So you're just trying to be a pain in the ass at that point.
I think there's something to that. I also think, I have to say, though, I found there is some of that tension, I think, is good. And I think that, to a certain extent, from what I've seen, I'm not convinced it didn't help Clinton on some level. I mean, I think the idea that this was not just simply a coronation, that this is coming out of a cauldron of genuine debate, and even if it's ill-informed debate, it's coming, you know, from a cauldron of genuine disagreement and she, in some ways, like, you know, the giving a speech with that stuff going on, you know, with people starting to chant your name in the middle. And this was not, you know, this is not a huge hall. I mean, it was big, but it wasn't,
right,
you know, like,
I used to go there when I was in college, in fact. I
there,
know it well.
There you go. And so it definitely, you know, if someone, one or two people, can really fundamentally,
well, no, especially if you're near where the mics are, you can make, there's no doubt you can make a lot of noise. And look, I don't want this to all be about that.
Right.
Because,
well,
I think most of the people who were there for Bernie were awesome.
Right.
And, you know, were people that say, who stood up and they fought and they changed a hell of a lot of stuff. Because as I said to you, I may have been a one issue voter, which led me towards Clinton. But I agreed with Bernie over Hillary on a number of things, as you can imagine, because you and I tend to agree on most things. And I like where that moved things to. So I think most people there did their job, did a great job, you know, of being a part of the process of moving a candidate to the left. That's where the energy is in this party. I wish we had been more to the left over the last couple of years, and I think we'd have fewer problems than we do now, but that's past, and that is what it is. And to say quickly, like, the other speakers there, I mean, the lineup versus the Republican lineup.
Unbelievable.
You know, I know we want to blame this all on Trump, and Trump is a unique threat, being that he seems to have no understanding of when he crosses lines and that why that's a problem. Because he's so clueless, I guess, to steal Biden's little line there, which is entirely true. He just has no clue about anything but anything that affects his ego. But, you know, when people talk about the hate speech and stuff coming out that's normalized our politics, I mean, you know, Ted Cruz still gets up and calls abortion murder and, you know, calls people at Planned Parenthood butchers and things of that sort that clearly move our politics to a different place. The speech, the Mussolini impression by Giuliani, the Chris Christie ridiculous speech that violates basically your ethics as a prosecutor to get up and do that in public. I mean, you know, most of the people who you would call headliners didn't even show up. The ones that did show up were all venomous. And then, of course, they have this collection of, like, aggrieved white guys who they found in every part of society, you know, not shocking either. Hey, Duck Dynasty guy and Scott Baio and, you know, Voight and all. I mean, you look at Katy Perry getting up and Meryl Streep and just the differences in sort of the type of talent and the type of people willing to associate themselves with one versus the other. I mean, they're such different worlds. And so, you know, the Democratic Convention makes you feel a lot better about America, but that only lasts, you know, if we win, which I think we will. And I think I'm interested to see what kind of balance, because I think the Democrats, who used to, you know, have a reputation for not being able to, you know, get out of their own way, in addition to some of those speeches, stage managed a great event. It'd be hard to pick out who gave the great speech, because the greatest speech, I give you a half dozen. I mean, Michelle Obama's was amazing.
Right.
You know, I thought Joe Biden's was amazing. I thought Michael Bloomberg gave a great speech reaching out to people outside of that hall who we'd like to come along. I thought Reverend Barber gave a phenomenal speech. I think, and I'm going to forget the name, so I feel terrible. You know, the Muslim gentleman who got up and spoke about his son. That was probably one of the most powerful things the whole time. I think Cory Booker we go on and on. And I think, you know, Hillary, not known for being a great orator, I think did a really good job. I think she gave overall a really good speech that hit all the important points, had some really funny lines in it, you know, 70 odd minutes. And I mean, odd. Well done. And some of the other things she said.
All right, well, let's get to some of these clips, because you mentioned a couple of the people that we have clips for, and I think you're right. And I think Hillary, from my perspective, content aside, although, you know, I was pretty happy, broadly speaking, with the content. I thought her delivery of that speech was as good of a Hillary Clinton speech as I've seen. But let's start with this one. Reverend William Barber has been the, and you mentioned his speech was fantastic. His speech blew me away.
Speech, like, you know, that's the kind of speech where literally you almost feel your body being.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like that. You just sit there and you say, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that good.
Here is a segment of that speech. Again, this is the guy who has been one of the main driving forces behind the Moral Mondays movement in North Carolina. Which has been going on now for a couple of years. Here's the Reverend William Barber.
That's why I'm so concerned about those that say so much about what God says so little while saying so little about what God says so much. And so, in my heart, I'm troubled and I'm worried by the way faith is cynically used by some to serve hate, fear, racism, and greed. We need to heed the voice of the scriptures. We need to listen to the ancient chorus in which deep calls unto deep. The prophet Isaiah cries out, "What I'm interested in seeing you doing," says the Lord, "as a nation is, pay people what they deserve. Share your food with the hungry. Do this, and then your nation shall be called a repairer of the breach." Jesus, a brown-skinned Palestinian Jew, called us to preach good news to the poor, the broken, and the bruised, and all those who were made to feel unaccepted. Our Constitution calls us to commit our government to establish justice, to promote the general welfare, to provide for the common defense, and to ensure domestic tranquility. Now, to be true, we have never lived this vision perfectly, but this ought to be the goal at the heart of our democracy. And when religion is used to camouflage meanness, we know that we have a heart problem in America.
And he goes on, I should say.
He goes on with the defibrillator. That was just amazing.
It was an amazing run. It got the entire convention shook. And he made a point of saying, there's a lot of, obviously, God talk here. But he made a point in his speech of saying it doesn't matter, Muslim, Jew, Hindu, Buddhist, whether you practice no faith, whether you Christian, Catholic. I mean, he went. He's an incredibly great speaker. Very impressive.
Well, what was really important, I'll just say quickly, is he's exposing the emperor as having no clothes, and the Democrats don't do that enough. In other words, on religion, he was exposing that they just use it when you know the parts that are convenient for them and use it for fear.
Right.
But most of the stuff that you actually hear and read God and Jesus saying, they're nowhere close to. And they don't embrace, they outright violate. The other important thing, though, let me say quickly that he did, and, I do this, so I'm so glad to hear other people, except for I'll admit that I can't do it with near his charisma and swagger, which is when the Republicans claim the Constitution as their own. They do this, they refer themselves as constitutional conservatives, which is such a pile of crap, as they're advocating for torture, for example. But they do this, and I go up against the gun nuts, they do this. And so for a while now, I've been pushing back by writing and pointing out the fact that, in the preamble of the Constitution, it talks about the general welfare and domestic tranquility
yep.
as being what the government's supposed to be there for. And when people are being shot in our streets by military-style weaponry, they're failing at that. And yet I can't understand why we've never, embraced those aspects of the Constitution as much. Every time they say Second Amendment or something, even if it's not the Second Amendment, constitutional conservative or whatever, we should point out what actually is in the preamble there, as in the most important part of what our government's supposed to do that conservatives are completely opposed to. And he does that and does it better than I ever could. So I'm so glad, and I hope that it picks up when other people do.
I hope you're right. Here is another. This was a pretty devastating moment. I mean, there is a lot of talk about how conservatives on Twitter in particular, this is where people broadcast this stuff, obviously, but we're lamenting the fact that the Democratic convention was, in many respects, much more thematically akin to a Republican convention in terms of its sort of overt patriotism, I guess, and the mention of God and optimism. I mean, there are moments where I, frankly, that type of stuff makes me uncomfortable.
Me too. The USA chanting, I don't like, and I'm not comfortable with. I think it's counterproductive.
I literally feel like I've parodied it.
Small-minded.
Like that.
So that I don't like. I have no problem with them getting up and having, as long as the people who are getting up and being those patriots, like General Allen and others, are making our arguments in patriotic terms, which is what I believe, that the more patriotic thing is not to send troops in harm's way before you know what the hell's going on there. It should be a last resort. You know, those kinds of things. As long as it's still our message, then I'm all for it, as long as it doesn't go overboard. And that, to me, when you're chanting USA, USA, you've kind of reached that.
The Allen thing came close. I mean, he at least was sort of both advocating peace and then also talking about, you know, we've got the military with the best weaponry. I mean, like, you know, you got to take
it. Yeah, that was a little too much for me.
You take it one more sentence.
Stuff, I agree.
Right? Like, what does that best weaponry do? It kills.
He should have left out the weaponry and said we have the best, you know, we have the best American citizens, or, you know, in better language than this, serving, because, you know, Trump's also denigrated the actual military.
Right.
I get it wanting to defend the people there, but yes, you can leave the weaponry out.
We can kill with such force. That to me gets a little bit too much. But all right, here was a moment which was incredibly moving. Khazir Khan, who's the father of a captain in the U.S. military, who was awarded posthumously I'm not sure which medal was it. I don't know if it was the Medal of Honor, but perhaps.
Oh, I thought it was. I could be wrong.
And he, for saving the lives of a couple of his troops, the father, who has spoken that the fact that his son was so attached to these the people he served to, and so determined to fight on behalf of the United States after 9/11, that it indicated that he made the right move in his life to bring his family to America. I mean, you know, I don't know that I could come to that same conclusion, frankly. But if I lost my son in that way,
I could ever come to any positive conclusion.
Right.
So it's rather amazing.
But it is. It's definitely powerful. And he spoke, and here is where he goes directly at Trump. Because, you know, people have to remember, folks like Khazir Khan and his family, Donald Trump represents an existential threat to them in a way that I think it might be hard for a lot of Americans to fully appreciate. I mean, there's nothing theoretical here. You know, it is a perfectly rational fear to have. If this guy becomes president, like, hey, is this a country that 5-10 years from now, we don't know where this could go. So here is Khazir Khan addressing Donald Trump directly.
Donald Trump consistently smears the character of Muslims. He disrespects other minorities, women, judges, even his own party leadership. He vows to build walls and ban us from this country. Donald Trump, you're asking Americans to trust you with their future. Let me ask you, have you even read the United States Constitution? I will gladly lend you my copy.
Pretty moving stuff. I mean, when you know the emotion behind this guy's determination
rather
to speak.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, just that type of stuff. I mean, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see how this convention if it moves the needle in terms of like the polling, it will be. It's not inconceivable to me that this is a big turning point, that we see more more implications of this convention than we do most. And I think, you know, we're going to see the debates are going to be like this too, I have a feeling. I think because of the nature of Trump's campaign, where he has no ground game, because of the fact that he doesn't even have, in some states, Ohio, for instance, right? He doesn't even have a surrogate ground game. Because,
yeah, I mean, that's the interesting thing here is what, you know, so we're all bothered, I'm sure we are, by the fact that this thing's even close, as it shouldn't be. I'm interested, I mean, I'm bothered because there's an America I believe in that I think was very much being talked about at the Democratic debate, I mean, Democratic convention, not because it was Democratic, because of the individual things individuals like Nazir Khan were saying. I think that is incredibly important, and yet, we have to see going forward who, you know, if on the Democratic side, what the Trump people are able to do to counter, you know, a lot of this stuff. I mean, most Republicans can still support the kind of crap you saw. I mean. The America I want to believe in is one that would see the Republican convention and maybe like 10% would still say, okay, that's acceptable. The fact that he's going to get at least 38% of the vote is just distressing to me as an American who believes in what I saw at that convention. When you get past that, I'm just stressing this and talk about the actual numbers and whatever, I'm interested to see where they go after this Democratic debate. But as you said, with a lack of a turnout operation, you know, I mean, most people will estimate that in some states they can make a difference of up to 4 points. You know, I mean, it's a pretty big deal, especially in bigger states where you need more of that kind of an operation. And Ohio is the seventh biggest state in the country. So, you know, I think it's something worth keeping in mind when all these numbers do come out, is that all that Republican hate fest, they may get their 38%, they may even get 43, 45, I hope it's not closer than that. But, you know, the turnout was probably not going to be in their favor because they're not running a real campaign.
Let's check into just a couple more Hillary clips if you've got time, Cliff. Because
I do, as long as you don't need to kick me off.
No, these represent a couple of the themes that we've talked about. Here is Hillary Clinton articulating really the centerpiece of the Bernie Sanders campaign, slightly different words. And I think that's a very conscious choice because she wants to send a signal to the Sanders people, but she also wants to, you know, project in this convention. I mean, a lot of this, her speech, was absorbing progressive values. I mean, I heard Nicole Wallace on MSNBC just outraged. Like, she has completely alienated all the Republicans. And frankly, I got to be honest with you. Like, I don't
Isn't
think
she the one who was saying her party was dead the night before.
Well, yes, but she says
it's back to life.
But it's fascinating to me because I think Clinton laid out as progressive and specific of an acceptance speech as we've heard since, I don't know. I mean, maybe 20 or 30 years, 40 years. I mean, because, you know, those proposals that she's outlining there are pretty...
My guess is the most since McGovern.
Maybe.
Was the nominee.
But...
I mean, even Carter moved things markedly to the right in what he stood for. The platform may have been more progressive, but not, you know, a lot of Carter people forget now. Was sort of a neoliberal figure back then,
right? And
which is why Teddy Kennedy.
I'm just talking about the speech. I'm not even talking anything beyond that. But what she did not do was she did not attack Republicans. She basically tried to cleave Trump from the Republicans, which I have an issue with in terms of where we go down the road. But she did that by making her language, you know, I think a little bit less challenging. So here is. Clinton on why, well, this is clip number three. Here she is basically expressing Bernie Sanders' central theme, doing it in slightly different words.
And here's what I believe. I believe America thrives when the middle class thrives. I believe our economy isn't working the way it should because our democracy isn't working the way it should. That's why we need to appoint Supreme Court justices who will get money out of politics and expand voting rights, not restrict them.
And she goes on to say, and if necessary, we'll have an amendment to overturn Citizens United. But it's interesting, you know, I don't think Bernie Sanders said our economy isn't working because our democracy isn't working the way it should. He sort of flipped that, right? Our democracy isn't working the way it should because our economy is not working the way it should. In other words, right. Because we've gone from a plutonomy, because we develop a plutonomy, when then we've gone to a plutocracy. But it was also interesting to me that she used the Bernie Sanders sort of front-end handle. This is what I believe. Now, maybe she said that before, but it's definitely something you associate with Bernie Sanders, right? Because this is what I believe. I believe.
Right.
And that's exactly what she did. And so I thought that was really interesting. There was a lot of like, wasn't necessarily a dog whistle to the Sanders people. It was a little bit louder than that. But she has integrated these ideas at least into her rhetoric. And that's encouraging to me.
I agree. You know, the one thing I would say that I think was missing, and I think this is along the lines of what you're saying, that was missing by design because they're trying to not offend Republicans, is more talk of the Supreme Court. Maybe they don't want to remind Republicans that it's a 4-4 game, basically, right now. Mm. And whoever gets elected will choose that ninth justice. Maybe they're hoping they can win some people that are Republican. I mean, clearly they are. But that's one that I think they should have made a bigger deal of and could have articulated, you know, who the ninth justice should be in our values if they'd used language as they should.
I think you're right.
Laundry list of issues. It has to be values that the ninth justice and that putting a justice on the court represents. You know what I mean?
I think you're right. I think they purposely didn't address that because they wanted.
No, that's what I'm agreeing. Yep. That's what I'm saying.
Yep. I think they didn't do it. They should have. Here is the other part of the sort of the Clinton calculation, which is to make make this about a unique quality about Donald Trump that is distinct from him being the Republican nominee. One where it's basically like Donald Trump is just so outside of the mainstream or even like he's just not responsible enough. This is like basically the temperament argument, and she did it two different ways. Here is the first temperament argument that she makes. In regards to the generals.
Now, Donald Trump says, and this is a quote, "I know more about ISIS than the generals do." No, Donald, you don't.
I mean, that's pretty...
That was one where her delivery was literally perfect.
Yeah.
The tone, the pause, the whole thing, that was delivered. That may have been the best line she delivered. I mean, the definitely a guy who can be baited to tweet, you know, shouldn't be someone who has the nuclear codes is another great line. There are a number of them in there, but her delivery on that one was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, in regards to that notion that Trump is so... temperamentally inappropriate to be president. Hillary quoted Jackie Kennedy as part of her saying, like, this is a guy who gets baited by tweets and...
Yeah, little man of fear
right.
or whatever it was.
Here's that clip.
Calling him little, too. You know what's driving him nuts. She should have thrown hands in there.
That
would have really gotten to him.
Here's that clip.
So just ask yourself, do you really think Donald Trump has the temperament to be commander-in-chief? Donald Trump can't even handle the rough and tumble of a presidential campaign. He loses his cool at the slightest provocation. When he's gotten a tough question from a reporter, when he's challenged in a debate,
when he sees a protester at a rally. Imagine, if you dare, imagine him in the Oval Office facing a real crisis. A man you can bait with a tweet is not a man we can trust with nuclear weapons. I can't put it any better than Jackie Kennedy did after the Cuban Missile Crisis. She said that what worried President Kennedy during that very dangerous time was that a war might be started, not by big men with self-control and restraint, but by little men, the ones moved by fear and pride.
So there you have it. I mean, I think, this is the case they made. It's going to be interesting to see if it works.
Not so interesting as much as it better.
Yes, exactly. I mean, interesting.
Otherwise,
I meant interesting in the next 2 weeks.
From New Zealand.
In the next 2 weeks. But
because I've decided, Sam, I think I could live a very fulfilling life as a shepherd. And there's a lot of quality sheep in New Zealand. It looks beautiful.
Somebody better
that part of the world. I think if Donald Trump gets elected, I think I'm gonna herd myself some sheep.
Well, our next guest, I think, also has some thoughts. She's been asking me about that as well. But I hope there are people out there who have been who are now photoshopping that image of you as a shepherd in New Zealand. I want to see that.
If you have those skills and you send it to me, I promise you, I will retweet it.
All right. Cliff, as always, a pleasure. Thanks so much, buddy. We will talk to you next week.
Great talking to you too, buddy. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break here, folks, with a little musical interlude while we set up for our next guest, who will be joining us to give us her thoughts on the speech and perhaps maybe a movie recommendation. Take a quick break. Be right back. What's that? Let's do Jimmy. We're going to do, this is going to be a, we're still going to go longer with the freebie today. All right, so here's a Jimmy Reefer Cake song. What is the Jimmy Reefer Cake song?
Wolf Like Hillary, it's called.
Wolf Like Hillary, okay.
Great Matt Leck on All the Hypocrisy Podcast. Featuring the great Matt Leck on All the Hypocrisy Podcast.
Probably will vote for Hillary, especially depending on what Trump says.
But I was convinced by Gloud when he said, like, we don't have to, like, just crown her now. Like, I think there's some degree of, like,
don't tell anybody I said that, man. Don't tell that. Sammy.
Especially. Yeah, I'll keep that off the air.
Yeah, I'll just annoy him with the election fraud thing again. I'll come at him, dude.
I said vote Bernie if you love this country. To cure the malady of income inequality. Got a curse she cannot lift. Hillary's position shifts. She's a friend of Goldman Sachs. She's the queen of the hypocrites. Bought and sold the media are. They said Bernie wouldn't get too far before the transformation took and the stranglehold on the party shook. Their minds would change if they explained election fraud. We lost the game because they played as if they're God. Their minds would change if they explained election fraud. We lost the game because they played as if they're God. Establishment, I hear their take on Bernie Bros and Reefer Cake. I don't listen to the freelancers when I'm looking for the real answers. Hillary, we recognize, has a hideous past to hide. And she supports the fracking guys. True, 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 true.
I think you should treat them both as wolves. Like, I think generally.
Yeah, they are both wolves.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy Reefer Cake. I have to say, just pushing back a little bit on that. I mean, I like the song. Pushing back on that just a little bit, that Bernie Sanders, communications director, former communications director for the campaign, said, "I'm sorry, we lost. It wasn't rigged. We weren't cheated. There was no fraud. The six emails from the DNC didn't impact that."
Yeah, but what's her position on weed?
Well, that's
exactly.
I bet you she's probably pro weed there.
I like Lex's insight at the end there. Treat them both like wolves, man. You were getting in the cake zone.
I appeared on Jimmy Reefer Cake's podcast a couple weekends ago.
Yeah, I hope we put that on the front page of majority.fm. We'll put a link up there. We should put that on today. In fact, let's do that. People are going to want to hear from it. I just want to say this. I just got an email from a listener pointing out that Snopes.com says that it is unproven, the claim that candidate Dr. Jill Stein opposes vaccines. She has a more nuanced position than opposition to vaccines. So I just want to push back on that, or a listener did, in terms of what Cliff had said. So it's not necessarily the case. She criticizes the for-profit healthcare model, but she does not specifically address vaccines. I think broadly speaking, she seems to be in support of them. So I just wanted to make that clear. Okay, now, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Jimmy Reefer Cake, for that song. Now, ladies and gentlemen, want to bring in a someone I've known for quite a long time. She's we spoke to her actually back in 2008, if I remember correctly. She did appear on Break Room Live, giving us some commentary on John McCain, and maybe we can repost that. That video on from Break Room Live on our stream. But here she is, Myla Cedar. She is now considerably older than that time. I believe you were, if I recall, in 2008, you were about 3. Is that right, Myla?
Yeah, around 3.
Okay, and so now you are, you're significantly older. You're almost, how old?
11. I'm almost 11.
You're almost 11?
Yeah.
Okay, and so I like to think that your sense of politics has evolved a little bit, right? A little bit more. You're a little more sophisticated now.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, I think my knowledge went from this to this a lot more higher on politics.
A little higher on the politics. I think so. I mean, at the time, you did though have an issue with John McCain at that time,
and mostly
I think
his chubby cheeks. That's all. Really.
Well, you know what? It proved to be a problematic with him. What do you think of Sarah Palin? Do you remember when he picked Sarah Palin as his VP?
The only thing I really remember is she looks a lot like Tina Fey.
That's right.
And really, I think that Sarah Palin just recently, actually, Sarah Palin and Donald Trump have had a connection.
Yeah.
And I was depressed when I saw the newspaper. I was like, oh no. If this is really going to happen in 2016, which it won't, obviously, I'm just going to die and I'm just going to move to Canada. That's all.
Well, I think people in Canada would not appreciate your equating moving to Canada with death. But because Canada is a nice place to live. But you did. Do you mind if I share what you texted me the other day?
No, I don't mind.
You don't mind? Okay. Because you said, you texted me, Daddy, what happens if Trump becomes president? What will we do? And
I believe you said, like, we will toughen it out and we will try to fight for a new president.
That's right. That's right. We'll be fine and we'll work to elect someone different. And then you said, so we will survive with a human eating monster for the next 4 years.
Yes. That's what I said.
All right. Well, I mean, I think that's not...
what does that mean?
Human eating monster, not literally, because that would be crazy. But human eating monster really means that he's like, takes away everyone's beliefs, like, from the Republican side, and he just pulls it in himself, and then he just eats all of their beliefs and ruins everything. Because, personally, I am the most un-Donald Trump fan you would ever meet. I hate him so much. Yeah, a monster who eats humans, brains. And if he becomes president, which he obviously won't, all he's going to do is just make people afraid of themselves and other people.
What was your sense of Hillary Clinton's speech last night? Now, I know it was a little bit long for your tastes. You were dancing during part of it.
True that.
But... what, give me your sense overall. I mean, is this a big deal to you that there's a woman who is nominated for president?
Well, first of all, through back all of those years, let's like take it back to the 1700s where George Washington became president. And now it's crazy to think that Barack Obama is our first African-American president. And like, and Hillary is our first woman. And if Bernie was elected the nominee for Democrats, he would be our first Jewish president. And it's just, I feel like Hillary and Bernie have these two really, really big connections that if either of them both, if one of them became president or if either one became president, they would both be amazing presidents. But I think that just Donald Trump is like no other Republican nominee we had before. He's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He literally, okay, so we began this election last year thinking, okay, Donald Trump's never going to make it. He's probably going to be out soon. But now, like, he's our Republican nominee, and people are starting to actually worry. And people are like, well, if he becomes president, what are we going to do? And then if everyone moves to Canada, Canada will be overpopulated. So it's going to be crazy. And then there's going to be no one in America. So he's basically going to make America's reputation horrible. Not great, horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, yeah, I mean, the idea, I guess he'll return America to, again, maybe back to the time of the Founding Fathers, when there was literally, like, only, like, a couple of 100,000 people here. Is that what you're suggesting?
That's what I'm probably is going to happen if he becomes president. Everyone's just going to move out of this country.
I don't know how easy it is for everybody to move out of the country, but...
Kelly's
Sam, stealing the mic from
Sam is acting like it's very strange to say that people would move to Canada. Where have you heard that from, that people might want to move to Canada if he gets elected?
Who have you heard that from?
Myself.
Who else, maybe? Maybe your dad?
Maybe my dad, maybe.
I don't think so. It's pretty clear. I mean,
mostly my friends at school. Mostly my friends.
Yeah,
like,
this is not. She's not getting this. She doesn't listen. You actually think that Milo listens to me enough to?
Never. He's like, okay. My dad's like, we're not going to move to Canada. And I'm like, excuse me. So it's just really hard to like think that this could happen to our country, and no one really wants it to.
And what else? I mean, what? Are you planning to do any campaign work this? I mean, what are you going to do about it?
Well, here's the thing. So I usually have this thing where I try to make things better, but nothing works.
What are you talking about?
So I try to convince people to hate Donald Trump, like my grandpa, for example. And he's like, but...
Let's not get too specific with...
Blah, 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 defending Donald Trump and everything. And I'm like, just hate him, please. Okay, anyway, I think I'm actually going to really try hard if he becomes president to try to get people to turn. And, you know, this may be the first time that he's so bad at being a president that he may only be president for shorter time in the terms. So, because
I don't
he's
think
just too horrible.
You think so? You think if he gets elected that he'll somehow, they'll get him out before then?
Yeah. He's just like...
Do you know anything about the vice presidential nominee for the Republicans?
I have no idea. I don't care at all.
You don't? What about the Democratic vice presidential nominee?
Tim Kaine has a very good personality. He, first of all, reminds me of a leprechaun in a good way.
Of course.
And I think that he, just because it's like personality and what he's been through to, you know, get this a very, 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 very honorable nomination to be vice president of the United States. And I think that no one's going to really be as amazing as Joe Biden's pair with Barack Obama, because those...
You really like Joe Biden.
Joe Biden's pretty phenomenal man.
Really? What makes him so phenomenal? I didn't know you had such affinity for Biden.
I was watching the presidential debate two nights ago, and
convention.
Convention. Whatever. And I was... No. Well, not whatever, but whatever.
Right. Not whatever, but whatever.
So I was... There was this video that pulled up 5 minutes long of what he's done in the country. Before that, I really was like, okay, he's a really good vice president. He's just an amazing vice president and everything. But like, I really saw what he's really done to help this country out. And before he was even, you don't have to have a good role to be a good person. So like, if you're not in the Senate, or if you're not in the House of Representatives, and if you're not in some way of politics, you can still help out this country, and you can still make it better.
I'm glad you got that message. Now, we should say, in your defense, in terms of the not knowing who the Republican vice presidential candidate is, you were on sleepaway camp, right?
I was, yes.
Okay. Yeah, you don't have to give the name of the camp, but you were a sleepaway camp, and so you missed the Republican convention.
I'm glad.
Yeah,
I'm really glad.
Actually, I am too. I don't know if you could recover from that at your age. It could be difficult.
I'm Donald Trump. Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna nominate this person for my vice president. Yeah.
That's your Trump impression.
I think it would be like more like, yeah, I'm gonna nominate this person.
The facial expressions you're making are spot on.
He's like. And if he sees this, he's gonna be like, "Whoa, what is that kid's problem?" I'm gonna be like, "You."
Well, I don't think he's gonna see this.
I got one less problem without you, Donald Trump. I got one less problem without you, Donald Trump.
Mila likes to sing. Now, Mila, so is there any other political issues you want to talk about before we migrate into your movie recommendation? Because your movie recommendation, I think, is actually going to be a little bit controversial.
My movie recommendation...
Well, don't go there yet. I mean, I'm asking you, is there any other political observations you want to make at this stage? What do you think Hillary Clinton has to do to win?
Hillary Clinton has to convince many, many more people. I think that Hillary Clinton's got the Democrats. Like, I don't think big Bernie fans would rather choose Donald Trump over Hillary.
Why?
Because you see, Donald Trump is an actual horrible man. And Hillary Clinton can actually show this country what she can do. And she's very, very capable of a lot of good things. Some bad, but mostly good.
What are the bad things you think that Hillary Clinton is capable of? I'm just curious.
Hillary Clinton has done a few mistakes in the past. I don't want to say them. I mean, I will say them. Do you want me to say them?
Well, I'm curious as to what you...
Okay, so I have this friend at my day camp, and she is a big, big Bernie fan. And she says Donald Trump is worse than Hillary. I mean, Hillary Clinton is worse than Donald Trump.
Really?
Really. She's like, Hillary Clinton is the most evil woman on the planet.
What?
Yes. I'm exaggerating a bit.
I understand.
Donald Trump is definitely not worse, and she.
Well, no, but you're
that.
you're relating what this your friend told you.
Yeah, my friend's like, Hillary Clinton's evil, and if she becomes president, I'm moving to Canada.
So she's gonna move to Canada if Hillary Clinton. Well, all right.
Or she wants to. Let's say that. But I think that a lot of things that are going on is because people don't believe in Hillary Clinton for two ways. First of all, a lot of people are really, really sexist and are like, she's a woman. She can't be capable of running a country. Well, she's been capable of being a senator, a secretary of state. Like, that's so good.
Right. Okay, and what's the other things that they say?
And she's done bad things in the past, so why should we trust her now? Well, because she's moved on from those mistakes.
Do you have a sense of what those mistakes are? I mean, I don't mean to press you too much. This is not a gotcha situation.
Well, there was incidents with email. There were incidents with her stealing stuff from the White House.
She stole stuff from the White House?
Yeah, you didn't know that.
What, that furniture stuff?
Yeah.
Dude, that's a myth. All right.
What? You didn't tell me that. I just told you about it all the time, and you didn't tell it.
I don't think we've ever had a conversation where you've accused Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, we had, but whatever. She's had instances. I'm just going to let that go. Okay. She's had, excuse me. She's had incidents of emails, but that's really only the problem that I'm aware of.
Right. Well, you've had your own online scandals. We don't need to talk about that, but right? You don't have to give me that sign.
Online is a dangerous place sometimes, and it can be
very
dangerous.
Okay. So. That's your, you want to tell people what voice that is?
Well, this is Miranda Sings, so I really hope if you're Miranda Sings, you're listening to me.
If there's any folks out there who have a 10 or 9 or an 8 or
no, Miranda Sings!
Okay, yeah. Don't do too much of it. That's enough. Okay, all right. So now it's time, Myla, to give a movie recommendation. Now, you've told me the movie you're going to recommend. I think that's a great recommendation.
It's actually one of the best third movies I've seen.
One of the best third movies. What does that mean?
So usually in movies, there are sequels. So like, for example...
Not usually, but often.
Often, yeah. Often... Like, for example, Back to the Future. The second movie was terrible.
Really?
It was just focused on what's going to happen if the bully gets rich and then marries his mom. Like, that's just not a good storyline.
Does the bully from Back to the Future remind you of Donald Trump?
He actually does. He does. He, like, his hair is, like...
It was based on him.
Oh.
True story.
Yeah.
Really? That's crazy. Wow.
All right, so the Back to the Future 2 was
Back
a bit of a disappointment.
Back to the Future 2 was horrible. Yeah. And
Back to the Future 3?
Back to the Future 3 was okay.
Okay.
Ghostbusters 1 was awesome. Ghostbusters
right.
2 was amazing. But
Ghostbusters 2 was amazing?
I loved it. Okay. I loved both of those two movies.
Okay.
But Ghostbusters 3 was the best third movie that I've ever seen. I usually see bad third movies, like in Back to the Future, for example. Okay, so it also relates to women, because, as you know, in the first two Ghostbusters, they were men who were the Ghostbusters, but now these are women. The storyline's based on where is a ghost is in a castle, and a teacher gets fired. She has to go with...
Microphone closer to...
Couple... She has to go somewhere, and she finds her friend, and they bond, and they find new people to help out bust the ghost.
Right.
I rate the movie, actually, an 85% Rotten Tomatoes.
You give it 85% Rotten Tomatoes.
Maybe even 90.
But why? What do you mean, Rotten Tomatoes?
Well, I don't really know what Rotten Tomatoes means. All I know is that they're good.
You're just saying it's a good rating system.
It's a good rating system.
Yeah, so I mean, you can give the Myla Cedar rating system.
Well, my
you don't
rating
need to,
system is.
You can give it 85%.
It is. You know what? I give it 100. It's amazing.
Really?
Yes, you guys. It's worth the $9.
Myla, are you aware that there are a lot of like conservatives out there who are upset at the notion that. Women would be that they would make the Ghostbuster remake about women instead of men. Are you aware of that?
Yes. I was reading about the Ghostbusters 3 and I got really disappointed because, you know, these women are phenomenal actors and this movie proves that women can do what men can do. Everyone knows the natural legacy of Ghostbusters is to have men doing everything because they're stronger than women, but that's not true.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the thing. Is that from my perspective, I'm not sure that people took that much away from Ghostbusters in the first place.
Yeah, it's just the thing is that this movie is amazing, and to have it ruined by people's thoughts about women not being in a movie that men are supposed to do, So women can be in any movie that they get into. And no matter how many people complain about that, they already made the movie, it's already out, and it's a really good movie. I was really surprised, actually. And
do you have one specific thing you would say to conservatives who have a problem with women portraying Ghostbusters?
What have women ever done to you? Why do you have to treat them like they're someone else and they're a doll? Like, why do you have to think that women are always like Barbie dolls? Because they're not. There's so many women out there who are stronger than men, who are as, and also who are as strong as men. Why can't you just treat them like other, well, like men? Why can't you just treat them better than they are? Because this moves back. These conservatives are actually like, this is just takes me back to the women's rights movement. Like, in my fifth grade class, my teacher showed me and everyone else in our class what happened. I mean, well, duh, because she has to teach about that.
Right, of course.
But she showed us in a different way than other teachers. She was like, she actually taught us about what was going on right now in presence sometimes. So she was like, well, as you know, women are not always as equal as men now because other people feel that they shouldn't be. And that's not fair because they are the same exact person. Just because if they look like a Barbie doll does not mean that they are a Barbie doll.
Mm.
You don't have to be a size 2. You don't have to be tall or short or like medium size. You just have to be who you are inside a woman. And people tell a woman to be someone else. And that's just sad. That's really sad.
It's called objectifying, right? Is that what that is?
Yes. And it's also like pushing, like it's just forcing them to be someone else. Like if let's say that if a woman was on American Ninja Warrior.
Right.
It's the best show ever. Shout out to my best friend. I won't say her name.
Wait, what?
I'll tell you in a second, Dad.
Well, wait a second. When are you watching American Ninja Warrior? And who are you shouting out to? Do you know somebody on that show? What? Oh, she just likes that show.
Yeah, and we watch it together.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So, yeah,
maybe
we
should be a little monitoring a little bit more. And I don't think your friend is listening to this show right now. She might be.
I don't want to hear
her. Okay. Oh, you know, okay.
Anyway, so there is a lot more women, and I've seen a lot more women who are very, very stronger than the men. And people are like, okay, women are always so, so, so weak, and they can't do anything in the world. Well, see, Ghostbusters relates to woman empowerment, where they can actually show who women really are. Yeah, watch the movie. It's amazing.
You're sort of doing a dab there, too.
No, I'm not trying to do dabs. Okay. I'm not trying to dab.
And so was it funny, though?
It was hilarious. I actually thought it was really funny. And especially, shout out to you, Chris Hemsworth. You were really funny as a receptionist.
I don't know.
I mean, and your dancing skills are just like on fleek.
Well, all right. That's great. They're on fleek. Well, Myla, it has been great catching up with your analysis of the campaign. I hope maybe we can talk to you again before the election or maybe just after to get your reaction. It was really nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I appreciate it. Now, get back to work. Myla's here. She's cleaning up. Let's bring your daughter to work day and have her clean up the office.
JK, actually, I have to work on my birthday stuff and everything.
Myla's, why don't you tell people just what you're doing on the computer right now?
Well, I'm either watching Cutthroat Kitchen.
No, you're not.
I was watching Cutthroat Kitchen.
You shouldn't be. That's not what you're here to do today.
I have to figure out stuff for my birthday because we switched the date. And there's going to be a water slide. There's going to be colored water balloons. So we will all wear white shirts. And we would get ourselves like really nerdy. And we would... And excuse me.
Class act. Class act.
Excuse me. So we would. I know I'm a little bit immature for my age. Wink, wink. Okay. So, yeah, we're really excited to have a blast at the birthday party. Not to mention we're renting a 50-foot bouncy slide.
It's not quite 50 feet.
It's quietly 50 foot.
All right. Well, Myla Cedar, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Sometimes it's, I mean, you know, yeah, it's always a pleasure.
Stop talking right now.
Right. All right. Drop her mic. All right. Let's move on. She just dabbed, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, she dropped the mic. I'm sorry. She did. She dropped the mic. All right. We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. We've got a couple more clips of sound. We'll take some phone calls, take some IMs, and back in just a minute. Oh, just a reminder, folks, this show relies on your membership to continue and to grow. You can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. It's the least you can do. Or if you don't like Amazon, buy the stuff at jet.com. Much better at majorityreportkickback.com. All right, quick break. Be right back.